Hello, my name is Victoria, and welcome to our podcast, Monarcas. This is a podcast for Latin in BC. Here we share stories of founders, venture capital experts, investors, and champions of Latin markets. In this episode, we will collaborate with Maya Dadu, founder and CEO of Worky. Today, we will be listening from her own voice about her experience and journey to the VC ecosystem.
Hello, Maya. Welcome to our podcast. We have Maya and Victoria here with me today. Victoria is leading our LATAM direction, helping entrepreneurs and venture funds find opportunities and connect with investors in the United States. And Maya is a successful entrepreneur that jumped from Latin America and raised capital within the US, building a company now in Mexico City, having two pretty large funds with good names from, I think one is from Palo Alto, and a second one was North Carolina or
Washington. So Washington. Virginia, actually.
Yep. Virginia, yeah. So like Virginia, North Carolina. So Maya, you have such an impressive background. We are so eager to learn more. What brought you here? Tell us more. How did you start?
Thank you, Anna and Victoria. Very happy to be here. What led me to start up? I think that any entrepreneur will tell you that they either came across the problem and lived it in their own hands and experience, or they researched so much an opportunity that existed that they needed to cover. I think I'm clearly one of the prior, where I lived a problem that I realized needed a solution in order to bring a lot more efficiency towards the HR world. And I'll explain what Worky does. We are an all-in-one HR software built for Mexican companies. You can think of us as the Gusto or as the Namely for Mexican small and medium-sized enterprises.
Very, very exciting and impressive. You've been building this company for a while, and I know from your LinkedIn profile that you went to Stanford, right?
Correct.
Can you tell us a little bit more? How did your journey, how did your relationship with US, with venture capital started? I assume that Stanford was a good entry point.
Absolutely. When you think of it, I entered Stanford in 2012, and I left and graduated Stanford 2014. And of all my class out of the Latin American cohort, or let me just be very specific, out of the Mexican cohort, out of the 12 Mexicans that entered, zero of us had worked in technology. And this is 2012. By the moment when we graduated, only I entered technology, and it was because I stayed in San Francisco. And so this speaks to the degree that of maturity that the Mexican market has seen in tech penetration from 2014 till today in 2021. And very specifically, I think that if it weren't for my experience after graduation where I worked with eBay, I don't think I would have been as eager and as successful in technology as I am today. Being in the Valley, working in a large tech firm, I think could sound a little bit overwhelming, but I was working in a startup within eBay that had free flow in terms of funds, that had a lot of agility in the product that we were creating and direct kind of like insight of what was happening in the Latin American market. So my experience with eBay was very specifically around finance and analytics or strategy. But slowly, I think in technology, you're used to stepping on each other's toes in a positive way. And I started inheriting more of marketing and business development. And slowly they moved me into Mexico to ramp up the team that we were creating here. And that was really exciting. But what I realized, I think, is where the product is created was in the US, where the engineering team sat was in Taiwan, but most of the decisions were happening at a US level. And when I came to Mexico and started working more in an operative role, expanding the team and expanding our market penetration, within the Viva Anuncios website that we had, I lost touch with the management in San Francisco in a way. And I really liked having kind of like more of an opinion, being able to guide and voice and create all the analysis that led to where the decisions were making. And I assimilated a lot to, in San Francisco, you are kind of like building the product, but in Mexico, you're managing the restaurant, right? And what I realized is I actually really like managing the restaurant and creating all the restaurant myself. So it was time for me to start the entrepreneurship route, and HR has been a problem that has been understated a lot in the Latin American market in terms of technology penetration. And it's a problem that when you look at the workforce, it's 70 million Mexicans actually are in need of HR and better HR management. So it's a massive problem to tackle and to solve. And it's one that makes me very excited. And in terms of the VC space, like you were asking, the VC space barely existed in 2014 in Mexico. It was null. I think AllVP was one of the first funds that actually was founded by Stanford alumni in Mexico City and was key for many of the like small and successful companies that exist today. And as more funds started happening, I think that their success and their ability to attract capital depended a lot on their relationship that they had with government. So the Mexican government around 2016 and 17 created a fund for entrepreneurship. And this was super beneficial. So as entrepreneurs, you were able to ask the government for capital. As funds, you were able to ask government for 20% of your portfolio of funds. But this suddenly started blowing and started growing to at one point, all of the funds were focused on Series A, Series B, and very little was focused on seed capital. And so I think this is a problem that currently exists in Mexico.
This is, wow. First of all, wow. So you started, just to gather it up for everybody who is listening, you were from Mexico, you came to Stanford, not originally not to study technology, right?
Correct.
Then you decided to focus on technology, started working in eBay, in large corporation, but in a smaller startup-like environment within the corporation, and living in the Silicon Valley, San Francisco, I assume building your network and getting and really understanding the mindset, while at the same time traveling back and using your heritage and your, I'm sure, language and understanding of the culture back in Mexico. And that's, is that how you met your first investor?
Exactly. Through my network is how I met my first investor. I was eager to quit. I was thinking about quitting eBay. I didn't exactly know what I wanted to create. I knew it was in the HR tech space, and someone suggested I talk to Bernardo Cordero, who was our first investor. And in the first conversations, I think he appreciated the HR industry. He was a founder of Linio in Mexico, one of the largest e-commerce sites that sold to Falabella earlier in 2019, 2020. And from a very successful entrepreneur, I was able to raise in paper. And I think that I was one in a million in Mexico at that time. This concept of raising from an idea didn't exist. And what I really liked about working with Bernardo is that he was a second or third time entrepreneur. He had created his own VC fund.
And so he was basically a perfect angel.
He was a perfect angel. He knew exactly what I needed. He knew how to guide me in terms of how to recruit for tech co-founders, how to start the product market fit, how to start sales, how to get as quickly to an MVP as possible. And I had that company for the first year and a half. And after that, when I felt my confidence was up, I was able to become a lot more independent.
Beautiful. So what was your journey after that? When was the point when you were, okay, I'm ready to go back and pitch in the US, pitch in the Valley? What was your process?
I think there are three things that we needed to have in order to feel a lot more comfort entering the pitches with the US. One was we needed to have a solid product market fit, whether it was in smaller companies or a specific industry, we needed to prove that we had a product market fit. Second, we needed to prove that we had an ability to distribute our product. We are an HR software for SMEs. And so it's a very niche space, and proving and being able to verbalize how we were going to have our go-to-market strategy and scale was very important. And third was the team. With a team that we had already on board, how did we know it was the best team to get us through to the next round? And at that moment in time, it was late 2019, we realized that there was a lot of appetite for Latin America investment on behalf of VC funds. And while there was a lot of appetite for this investment, there was little execution still. It was too early on for a lot of VC firms to say, okay, I see Mexico, I'm going to make my first investment. I think a lot of VC firms in the Valley felt a lot more comfortable with Brazil and had investments in Brazil at that time, but that not yet Mexico, not yet Colombia. And so within it all, it was easier to prove to someone that was in love with a space, that was in love with a country, that we had a product market fit and that we were ready to scale.
I want to get back one step before you went to the funds. When you came to your first investor, Bernardo, right? Mm-hmm. And you just had, you know, your young, beautiful woman, you know, entrepreneur, just out of the eBay, fresh, with an idea. Mm-hmm. How did you convince to give you capital?
I think it relied a lot more on the conversations that we had and how I thought about analysis, how I thought about strategy. I was different in that I'd worked in technology for longer than most of my peers that were wanting to start up. They never had a foot into tech before. So that was an advantage for me. And moreover, I think my reputation as someone who's smart was there.
Well, I have no doubt in that. Okay, let's jump into the funds. So now you are here in the US. You see some interest in Latin America, but there's still hesitation. I think there is still hesitation, even though the interest is keep growing. So what made you convince this funds to invest? You said that they had to have like an understanding and be in love with the country. Is it some cultural connection? Do they have Latam roots, or what was it? What beyond you prior, being an amazing
I think
startup.
It's important to convey what the problem is locally. The problems are never the same within different countries when it comes to HR. So when you look at Chile, for example, it's also in Latin America, but they're a lot more advanced when it comes to HR mentality. Or when you look at Brazil, that the penetration of HR technology supersedes Mexico by 5 years. So why is Mexico so particular, and why is Mexico so backwards in certain aspects of it was important for them to understand. And when they have portfolio companies that they can call and validate this thesis, they're able to understand in a much clearer way. Additional to that, we needed to explain that the market and the total addressable market, the TAM, was huge. Why would a Silicon Valley VC invest in Mexico? Because the TAM is huge. Because they realize that you as an entrepreneur have the toolkit or the Swiss Army knife to understand and tackle the problem. And that was something that QED saw very clearly in us and Leap, who's also our investor, and which is why we're so happy to have them on board.
Great. Thank you, Maya. I am going to jump in. Talking about this, like the difference between Mexico and the US, there's a lot of cultural difference. And maybe in the US, they have like, they think about Mexico with a higher risk. Mm-hmm. Did you find any like cultural barriers or different mindsets when you were trying to raise capital?
Not very specifically. I think it lied more on the understanding of the problem, be it from a regulation basis. I think that potential US investors, they see Mexico as potentially higher risk politically and economically than the UN, than they do in the US. But we also have a massive advantage to the US that talent is ready, and talent is a lot more affordable in Latin America than what it is in the US. So while in the US, I could have one engineer with a $200,000 that I have in seed capital, in Mexico, I can probably have 10 or 11. So this speaks to the level, I think, of productivity that we can have, be it as an attribute to our current context.
Okay, great. And in another part, did you were supported in this fundraising journey? Do you have allies, like someone with more experience that help you in this process?
I think you, as an entrepreneur, you always have to be vulnerable and ask for help. Ask for help in if you need a very specific aspect of advice for business operations or in terms of fundraising, always be proactive to help. And this is why I think it's so important for you to really think about the angels that you bring on board at an earlier stage and the funds that you bring in at a later stage, because these funds are a little bit like your, it's your presentation card. So in a way, if you're able to bring in solid investors, it's the way that you come out across, but also think about the network that they're able to introduce you to. And in this way, my angel investors and my seed investors were of extraordinary help in presenting to other potential investors. And I would say, I also love when VCs email you out of the blue and LinkedIn you out of the blue. Just have a chat with them, because more often than not, they'll be a fit, and they have something to pitch you as an entrepreneur.
I want to touch a little bit on the subject of, hashtag diversity, hashtag mm-hmm. inclusion. So in the news, especially in Bay Area, especially in the United States, and all three of us are here, are not natives to Bay Area and are, I would say, not natives to technology in general. What's your experience being a LATAM founder, being a female founder? Have you had any... First of all, have you had an understanding that, you know, like, I am a female founder? Or was it for you like, I am a founder, you know?
I think of myself more like I'm a founder. I think female for me used to come secondary. I think over the past year, I'm a lot more comfortable saying I'm a female founder. I think for me, my transition mentally was at first, why should I be different? And not even thinking of myself as different. And I did not want the female word attached to myself. I've become a lot more comfortable with me saying that I'm a female founder over this last year. And the reason is, I think I bring a lot more of an edge towards my management in the way that we are scaling Worky by bringing in my full self, which is, yes, I'm a woman.
Beautiful. You mentioned such a powerful word. You said, as an entrepreneur, you have to be vulnerable. And I think this is one of the qualities that is tend to be more common or acceptable for females. Although both, I think any successful leader should be vulnerable, because this is how you grow. Have you experienced any challenges being from where you are, who you are, because of who you are in your fundraising, in your building, in the process of building the company?
So I'll switch the answer a little bit. And I would say, I think there's a huge advantage of being a female entrepreneur. When you reach out and ask for help, people will be a lot more open in actually discussing the problems with you. So whether it is me asking my peers in the fintech world or peers in the software world on how they tackled a problem, they're a lot more realistic and they're a lot more tactical and strategic both in the recommendations that they give me. And they feel a lot more comfortable saying, oh, yes, that was a huge problem for us. Well, you know what? We still haven't tackled it. It's a huge problem. We think of the solution going this route. So their ability to open up with me is greater. And I really appreciate that because I'm able to get better advice and not feel alone in that this is only my problem. And for me to feel validated that it's a problem that we all have as entrepreneurs. Second, in terms of how I felt fundraising, it was very clear when one VC in Mexico told me that I needed to change the way that I pitched. And I really appreciated it. It was a male partner at a firm. And he mentioned that the way that I was pitching was proving that I knew what we were building had a fit versus pitching for the middle and long-term idea. The day after he told me this, I got a coach. Because I did think that
there you go.
I need to dance the way, that they are used to being pitched. And so training myself and speaking towards the middle and long-term benefits and being able to have that exciting conversation and not really focusing on the problems that I'm solving today, but more on what I am creating and how it's going to be massive. What's a huge adjustment. And I really appreciated it. I think it was one of the main switches that I did at the moment that we raised our seed round. And it is something that as we're raising our Series A today, I'm focusing on pitching as well.
Beautiful. So can you tell me, just for everybody who is starting to fundraise right now, thinking about fundraising, how many conversations had you have to raise, you guys close in general, 3 million? Right?
Correct.
How many times you had to pitch to close 3 million?
We had to pitch close to 60 or 70 times. I was speaking to an investor about a month ago, and he's also an entrepreneur, and he needed to pitch 100 times as well. So the way that I see fundraising is a lot like a strategy. Okay, I'm going to be educated in fundraising. I've never done it before. So why don't we start with who do I not have anything to lose with and pitch to my peers, right? Pitch to the people I know will give me feedback when they understand the industry really well, when they understand the way that I communicate and they're able to give me feedback and I as an entrepreneur will be receptive. Second is, how can I pitch to the funds that I have nothing to lose because either they're a bad fit or they're too early stage or they're too later stage? How do I start pitching to those where what I'm losing is very small? And the questions that you start to get from these entrepreneurs and these funds is really interesting. And you start to learn how to draft your communication better, how to change the storyline, where to inject new pieces of information and how to keep them engaged. And as you go on with pitches, I think you become so much better and then it just becomes organic.
Beautiful. That's such a wonderful advice you gave. And it's amazing to hear it from somebody who've done it and who thinks about fundraising strategically. And it's also worked for you. You mentioned you're raising Series A, right? Mm-hmm. So how much are you aiming to raise? And tell us more about your ideal investor. We have some funds listening to our podcast as well. So maybe somebody will fall in love with and reach out on LinkedIn after this.
Well, we're releasing a very exciting new module within Worky. And within of itself, it's a module that will be able to raise our monetization rate by 50% on the price tag. And as we do that, we have hired the best team to create this. So what we're doing is we are fundraising our Series A. We're looking to be diluted between 15 and 20%. So most likely is that our seed round will lie between 7 and 10 million US. We're looking to close it over the next 2 months. And I know December holidays are in the works right now. So it will be something very agile, but there's a lot of heat within the HR tech space. I think when you look at industries that have been or have taken off with COVID, HR tech is one of them. The need for HR tech software in companies is huge, even during the pandemic management and post-pandemic. It's one of the areas in business that didn't receive technology before, but now realize it can't survive without it.
Very, very true. Maya, wonderful interview. I just have one last question for you. To anyone who is listening or watching right now, who is maybe in Latin America or in Eastern Europe or in Africa or in India or in any other emerging market, what would be the advice you would give them that maybe empowered you and helped you the most?
Attract the best team early on would be my advice to entrepreneurs. When you raise smaller rounds, I think you're a lot more worried in, you have less room for errors, but you have less room to bring in key talent to the organization. And my pitch to you would say, rethink about the amount that you're fundraising and go for a larger round. Multiply that times two. Give yourself wiggle room for error. Give yourself wiggle room for tests. That is really important at that early stage. Product market fit will take twice than what you think to have. And so give yourself, I think, room for attracting the best talent that will make sure you get there as quickly as possible.
This is golden. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Vicky.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, ladies. Let me.